Don't let anyone say that it's just a game, for I've seen other teams and it's never the same. When you're born in Chicago, you're blessed and you're healed. The first time you walk into Wrigley Field, our heroes wear pinstripes, heroes in blue. Give us the chance to feel like heroes too. Forever we'll win, and if we should lose, we know someday we'll go all the way. Yeah, someday we'll go all the way.
Well, if we had my way, we would just celebrate the Chicago Cubs for the next 90 minutes. Although Teresa's here, so we may just be doing that anyway.
That's what I thought we were here for.
Alan and I will take care of that.
Keep us on point. Well, thank you for the musical interlude, Rob. That was lovely to set the mood for the Chicago Cubs win last night.
Epic win.
Well, let me rephrase that. The Chicago Cub win early this morning.
Morning.
Yeah, so we're all a little, well, not maybe not all of us, but we're
at least some of us.
Right, a little bleary-eyed from...
How long was the rain delay?
17 minutes.
Long enough.
Oh, that wasn't, yeah, just
long enough
they got a break.
To regroup.
Yes. You know, that's...
That's why they won.
You go 9 innings... And then you tie the game, you go into the 10th inning, and then you're just like, oh, okay. And then they put that tarp out, and you're like, oh, God, I'm never going to go to sleep.
Right.
And then they win. Well, I don't know about you, Teresa, but you know, the adrenaline is flowing. So
4 a.m.
Like, forget going to sleep.
Seriously.
Yeah.
It was amazing.
It's just really, really cool. So
one for the history books. It was just, and, you know, hats off to Cleveland, too. It was just an amazing game.
It was the greatest World Series I've ever seen.
Unbelievable.
And that game was absolutely incredible. You guys want to rock?
Well, I lived in Cleveland, so I actually wasn't cheering for the Cubs. And,
yeah. I do feel bad for our dear friend Barbara Smith, who is
yes.
a Cleveland native, who was very, very committed to her team. So, but again, they played a fantastic series, and certainly it was a.
And what's the name of their manager?
Terry Francona.
And he was all over this morning talking about, you know, how classy the Cubs were. So they were...
Well, and right back to Cleveland, I mean, let's put it this way. There were a ton of Cubs fans in Cleveland, and of course, geographically, they're very close cities. So,
right.
They put it up on the scoreboard, the fans stayed. I think either team winning...
Both loved it, yeah. You
it
get that far.
Very
yeah.
cool, historic game all the way around.
I love the idea of a long curse being broken, and I hope to do that again, see that again next week.
Absolutely. Well, that's the thing. History being made.
Mm-hmm.
Cubs win.
What comes next?
Woman in the White House, all in the same week. And history is on our side. When the World Series goes to Game 7, if the American League team wins, Republicans win the White House. If the National League team wins... Democrats win the White House. History is on our side.
Well, you were up late last night.
I hate all of those.
At least five of my friends send me this.
Now,
I hate all of those models.
Well, everybody,
like,
everybody has a view on this. Scooter says, okay, good for them, but you could wait 1,000 years and Chicago would still come in last in the Pizza World Series. Some things never change.
Yeah, deep dish. You know, you're either born with it or not. But I will say that when we look at this also, I've heard the opposite. The other thing that flooded my inbox last night was the Nate Silver, which said that there is an equal chance of the Cubs winning the World Series as there would be of Donald Trump winning the presidency. So that was the other little anecdote to the statistics you're reading. So we'll go with yours, okay?
I'm going. I'm sticking.
All right.
I'm sticking with the winner. You know, I mean, I stuck with the Cubs for all these years.
Let me introduce everybody, and then we'll talk to you for a moment. And then we'll get actually into the show. Alan Chartok is with us. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Good morning, Chief.
A delight, as always, to have you here. Rosemary Armeo joins us. She is the head of the journalism program at the University at Albany. And
Hello.
It's a delight to see you again. Good morning. And Teresa Bourgeois, who is a communications consultant and a rabid Cubs fan. And we always love when she joins us and shares her expertise.
So glad to be here.
Thank you very much for being with us.
On such a historic day.
Yes. Now, let us, we have an announcement. Are you ready for an announcement,
please,
ladies and gentlemen?
Please,
okay,
please,
we have two announcements. Oh, one announcement is that, so we're going, the roundtable panel that we've extended, obviously, into the half hour will be going past Election Day, and you know, we'll continue that, and we'll move on. So we're going to be going from 9 to 10:30 every morning from now on. Now, how this impacts you, the listener, is the following way. One of the things to make this a little bit easier for everybody involved, not to bore you, but just to tell you that when you send a letter to Roundtable, well, pretty much everybody in the damn building gets it. So what we've done... What we've done is we are starting a new email address. So if you want to write to us now, it is panel, at WAMC.org. And those emails will come to us and to all parties who are involved in the panel. So it's panel at WAMC.org. Now, here's the thing. We're going to do sort of a soft opening on this. For those of you who are have it, whatever, committed to memory and put it into your browser and just press a button and do it, that's fine for a couple of days. But as of the 14th of November, that won't work anymore.
Then you're out of luck.
Then you're out of luck. So
you're only writing to yourself after that.
That's right. So if you want to write to us, and you might as well start today, it's panel at WAMC.
And you spell panel how?
P-A-N-E-L, okay. Because I know it's going to be P-A-N-A-L at some point. And I will just ask all of the panelists, P-A-N-E-L-I-S-T-S, during the 900 times during the course of the program where I say, write to us at Roundtable, that you correct
that
me.
That would correct
yes.
you. Yes,
okay.
It's like saying WAMC during the fun drive.
Yes, yes. WAMC.org, 1-800-323-9262. Right, right, right. So, we're thrilled to make that announcement, and again, just a small little bookkeeping thing that panel at WAMC.org, and now
do you also want to tell everybody about the exciting news, because we've had some criticism, Joe, about not having enough time during that last half hour, so we're changing that.
Yeah, so we're moving some newscasts around, and we're moving some things around. So it's going to be what do they say in the meatpacking business? We're filler free.
Filler free.
We're filler free.
That's interesting imagery.
Yeah, yeah. Mm. Now this is if you consider newscasts to be filler, but you'll still have newscasts.
Absolutely.
We'll still have all of the stuff that we normally have. We've just sort of kind of shuffled things around a bit, so it'll be a block. All right. So now that I've explained it and pretty much done away with all of our extra time, let's get to our subject at hand. But reminder, you can write to us at panel at WAMC.org. And we're very excited for you to do so because we want to make sure the email works. Okay. We did test it yesterday. Mm-hmm. I think you got everybody. Yes?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Test, yes.
Good. All right. So let us go to what is happening in the world today. And obviously, we just have 5 days until Election Day, and we continue to try to make sense of all that is, all of what is happening. And that would be, let's begin with the President of the United States yesterday out on the campaign trail. I will say, I don't know, did anybody else see this?
It's the incredible
whole
speech.
In Chapel Hill, North Carolina, the President of the United States gave one of the best stump speeches I've ever heard in my life.
It was so fun to watch campaigning.
It was, and I think he was having more fun when he's not campaigning for himself. You know, he's just, it was.
He has nothing on the line for this. He can just be, he can be crazy and he's
fun. He could be full out Obama, and it was really great. But anyway.
I watched the whole thing. I want you to know, mm-hmm. I sat there and I got a little tearful a couple of times because he was so good, it was beyond good.
It was, you know, real leadership. It was an incredible speech. And people should listen to it.
And perfect. I mean, just, right. I mean, and no matter what your politics are, if you just didn't examine a political stump speech, a beautiful speech. I mean, even just take the politics, whatever your politics are, and take that out of it and just look at the construction of it as a stump speech. It was just unbelievable.
You were so right. It was like a great orchestra ending in a great crescendo.
It was beautiful.
And the crescendo was amazing when he was talking about people of, you know, you did this. You gave people health care. You helped the environment. Because you went out and you voted for me, and now I want you to go out and vote for her and not turn back what we had done.
And it's a very tough thing to do. I mean, look, his popularity is immense.
Soaring.
It's immense. And he had a tough time, a tough job. I don't mean he had a tough time. He had to move his popularity and invest Hillary with some of that. And that's not an easy thing to do, but I think he did it extremely well.
And I think, as he says, when democracy is on the ballot, it was a real lesson in democracy. I mean, he really wove a lesson in democracy and what's important and that what the role of the citizen is in this process and how, you know, the history of that, the importance of that in the history of the moment now.
Well, but his job was, Teresa, of course, you're exactly right.
Millennials.
His job is millennials who are sitting there on the... behind him. I love watching the people behind him and what they do. And I love the diversity of the people, you know.
Well, that's right. And African-Americans. I mean, it was that event was African-Americans and millennials.
Just exactly what I was about to say, which is when he invokes, and I've heard him do it several times now, people marched in Selma, across that bridge in Selma, to give you that right, to give you that right to vote. That's pretty powerful stuff.
It really
is.
And
when he talked, you know, there's a whole issue of disenfranchisement of North Carolina voters. And when he talked about the 100-year-old woman who they were not going to allow to vote, just so powerful. And then I will say, as I was listening to it, I thought, can you imagine Donald Trump in this role, you know, in that role of president? Can you imagine? He just would not. Have that capacity.
I'm highly annoyed by the American people who only like our politicians when they're not running. Barack Obama did not get the sort of support he has now when he was actually in the thick of it. Hillary Clinton was popular before she officially announced. What is it, Joe Biden? Oh, if only we had Joe. Joe did run twice, did terribly. What is it about this country?
Well, I think when President Obama was running, his speeches, his oratory...
It was always high. That's true.
Right. There was a tremendous response to his oratory.
You know,
his speaking.
I agree with
you. When he was in office, not, but when he was running.
I agree with you, Teresa. I do have to say, though, you could make this, you know, you say, can you imagine Donald Trump doing that? But I can't imagine Hillary Clinton doing that either.
Yeah, it's true.
She does not have that level of oratory and that level of
Bill
leadership.
Clinton does.
That he does.
But Clinton's Democratic.
She does have a grasp of the issues.
Well, absolutely.
And she does have an understanding of the moment.
Well, I have to say that, you know, as you know ad nauseum, I voted for Bernie Sanders
Bernie doesn't have it.
And he's going to be with her today. They're going to be together today.
Yes, he is. However, I have to say that unlike the rest of you, I think she's improved terrifically.
Right.
And when I listen to her now, I'm very impressed with the way in which she's doing it. I think she has risen to the occasion.
I'm highly annoyed with her too, and I'm a big Hillary fan. But
I'm in a bad mood today.
Maybe
yeah.
I did. She keeps attacking Trump, and I want her to talk. I hate that Trump is getting away with saying, oh, it's a policy-free election. Hillary Clinton actually has thought through all the issues. She does have a vision. She does have a plan. I want her talking about that. It's not on television. It's not in the newspapers.
You sound like some of the people who write to us. Now, I have to tell
it's
you.
It's not there, Ellen.
You can write to us at panel@wamc.org.
But Rosemary, if I could I'd love to be able to just finish this sentence.
What sentence?
The sentence that
what
I was
sentence
working.
Are you working?
Now, you know you're going to try to do that to me so I don't remember.
You know he loves the period so that he can go and talk.
But I am... going to say that I think that she has risen to the occasion, and that she is she's doing a good job, and that she has to answer Donald Trump. Look, why? Because it works. Because it's the only thing I think that really does work with the American people. As Obama did yesterday and as Hillary's been doing, you got to talk about the misogyny. You got to talk about all that stuff, because if you don't, people's eyes glaze over and they go somewhere else.
And the records show that negative campaigns depress turnout.
Oh, I think every record is blown out of the water this election. Don't you think so?
She's not doing this because she's stupid.
I mean, there is nothing
not
conventional
she wants to.
About
because,
this campaign.
Right. I mean, that really is the choice, though. I think what she is doing, what her surrogates are doing, what President Obama did brilliantly yesterday is lay out the clear choice. And
yes.
He really is. Donald Trump is hazardous, you know, and I think that she has to go negative to make clear and to break through all of the noise that's happening.
So the point I only get the first sentence out, but the point I actually wanted to make was that
it was a great game last night.
Well, yeah. was that the president came out and after a day or two and faulted the FBI director James Comey and his handling of the emails related to the investigation into Mrs. Clinton's private server. He shouted out to college students in Chapel Hill, North Carolina, that they were crucial to the vote because the fate of the world is teetering. Mr. Obama's comments about Mr. Comey broadcast early in the day as recent polls showed a tightening race were striking for a president who has insisted he does not comment on FBI investigations. But Mr. Obama appeared to be doing exactly that and implicitly criticizing Mr. Comey's decision to send a vague letter last week to Congress and by extension the public. Now, Alan, you have been on this all week.
I have.
Saying that you were a little concerned of the...
I had no idea why the president sent Josh Earnest out there to say he had great faith in Comey and that Comey was a man of great integrity. And I'm saying, what's that? I don't get that. That only helps the other guys.
With this?
With this, it now appears that somebody was listening to WAMC somewhere in the United States and whispered in his ear, what is...
And you can, too, at WAMC.org.
Or at panel.
Panel.
You can write to us at panel at WAMC.org.
I would just like to say that my mailbox is full.
Yeah.
What's your point?
Well, because she's getting all the panel email. Well,
I know. I may not be... students, you may not be hearing from me today.
Well, that's fine.
Back to the matter at hand, I'm going to take the Bernie Sanders view on this. Enough with the emails. And I think there's five more days, and it's now... It's a big issue, but it's noise. It's really a clear choice between the two candidates.
Teresa, here's a piece of news. I was told by our David Gustina, I'm laying this on him, so if it's wrong, he'll have
He's our boss.
No, I'm just simply saying, I heard from David Gustina this morning that WBUR in Boston,
yes,
in a recent poll, yesterday's poll, showed that New Hampshire is now going for Trump. Now,
I'm very worried about this election. I think the country could go for Trump.
Well, yeah, I mean, in that poll, I believe he has a 1-point lead.
Well, so what?
No, I agree.
I mean, it's still an extraordinary...
I'm authenticating David Gustina's poll analysis.
Yeah, no, well, that's good. Because, as you know, Rosemary is the expert on things journalistic. But I can tell you that every time you see a major newspaper credit another newspaper with something, it's almost always because they're afraid they're going to get sued and they'd rather the other... They'd rather the original source got sued.
Can I just? We only have about a minute, but why New Hampshire is important in looking at this is that in September she had a 7-point lead, in October she had a 3-4 point lead, and now she's down a point. So that's significant.
Well, I think you know that it's close because President Obama's going there this weekend, and if they did not think it was close, they would not be sending.
No,
President
and
Obama
I started to talk
weekend.
About it simply because I think. When you said before that you're very concerned about this election, you're right.
Very concerned.
And I've been saying that for a long, long time. I got one real mean letter that said, Alan, cut it out. You're just helping the other guys. No, you have to acknowledge what's going on.
People need to
Is
vote.
That you?
Democracy's on the ballot. People need to vote.
I say cut it out all the time. But I told you I have a bet that this was going to be very, very, very close. And I thought for a while when Hillary opened it up that I would lose the bet. I was happy to lose it. Now I'm thinking I made the smart side of that bet.
We'll still see, right?
She's also putting more money into Michigan. That surprised me.
She's going to Michigan.
Yeah. Michigan in play, that's scary.
But
I don't think
but she also has the resources to do it and to be many places. But also the
he
one
has
thing
– momentum.
Yes. Well, the one thing I kept on hearing yesterday as I was watching probably we all watched the same thing, but when we were watching President Obama, was the case that he made, as the pundits make, is that if Donald Trump loses North Carolina, he loses the election.
Correct.
That there is no path to victory for Donald Trump if he loses North Carolina.
Which is why Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders are back in North Carolina today. I think North Carolina and Florida are going to get a lot of company in the next 5 days.
And the deal with Ohio, has she lost that?
She hasn't lost it, but I think that the demographics have shifted. And
it's
this,
4 or 5 points, right?
And I think that really it comes down to North Carolina and Florida. It comes down to whether or not people vote. Wow. And, you know, people need to vote for her.
Okay, so I on our first day of our new format, I already screwed up and I missed our break. Okay, so we'll take a break, and then we'll catch up with all the stuff we have to catch up, and then we'll throw it back, right? Okay, thank you, Rob. We'll be right back after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Very nice to have you with us and to have you aboard this morning. We have Alan Chartok, Rosemary Armeo, and Teresa Bourgeois with us. We are talking about election 2016. We are 5 days away from Election Day, which will occur on Tuesday. Just a quick reminder, obviously, WAMC will be covering the election all election night. I believe the coverage will be going on all day, and then Alan and I will be hosting coverage at night, and then along with NPR, who will be doing, I believe, wall-to-wall coverage
into
until
the
wee hours of the morning. Absolutely,
when they call the Senate for the Democrats,
which they will have to do because some of these Senate races are going to be very close.
It's going to be a long night, we think. And then the next morning, we will be the whole WAMC panel family will be on stage at the Linda. Now, that is an event that is sold out, but if you wish to be put onto a waiting list, that is possible, and you can just go to WAMC.org or call 1-800-323-9262.
And you can listen right on the radio.
That's
so
right.
So you don't have to be in the room.
That's
you
right.
You can stand outside with your headphones, maybe a little cold, and listen.
Kind of like they did last night at Wrigley.
Exactly.
Yeah, absolutely.
Go Cubs, go.
Okay, so we have a couple of letters. We'll get to those, then we'll move on to some other stuff.
Okay, here are a couple, and it's another change we're making. Our wonderful staff is looking at the news in the newsroom, is looking at the letters that are coming in and not allowing me to do it on the fly. And so here it is from Paula. According to a video released by Steve Piesnek, the intelligence community, CIA and FBI, along with Julian Assange and his WikiLeaks, are purposely and systematically trying to keep Clinton from winning. Isn't that against the law to interfere with the democratic process? Unethical? Un-American, at least?
Yes.
Well, you may say yes, but... Susan says, I absolutely agree with Rosemary. We the people dropped the ball by not supporting Obama and turning out to vote in the midterms to give him a Congress that would work with him.
That's a good point. We all do have to take responsibility for what happens in our government.
Jim says, President Obama lately, and particularly yesterday, has brilliantly demonstrated the glaring difference between oratory and demagoguery. It may be too much to hope that Trump supporters will notice, but maybe the undecideds will.
What do we make of undecideds at this point?
How can you be undecided at this point?
No, you can be undecided. You can be undecided. Look, is the glass half full or is it half empty? Half this country has the eligible voters have said they're going to vote for Trump and that they like him, and they have not moved off the dime for this entire thing. So his particular rhetoric and, in the words of the letter writer, demagoguery, speak to the effectiveness of a very negative campaign. Keep them out. Make sure they don't vote. Do all of those things, and he is, and it is effective in his group. But most, Roselle once said, Pete Seeger was at our house one night, and he said to Roselle, he said, you know, do you think mankind is good or evil? And Roselle said, pretty much evil at the time. And Pete said, I agree with you. So there is a natural instinct for people to go negative. That's my point. His banjo says, this machine surrounds hate with love. That's what it says on the banjo. But he knew, and I'm saying to all of you, when Trump goes negative, he knows what he's doing, and he does it well. And for those of us who believe on the other side, including my wonderful Roselle, that's a whole other thing that, you know, positivity is really something special.
But in doing so, he's tearing at the fabric of our country.
He is.
And he is really cutting deeply into our basic fundamental democratic principles. And one hopes that, you know, when people go into the to vote, that they will vote against that.
May I point out to you, Teresa, which I know you know, that, and to everybody else, that Joe McCarthy, before he got his, had this country in knots, tied this country in knots with this very kind of rhetoric.
Right. No, it's true. It's, you know, the power of leadership. You can use it to, you know, foment hate, or you can use it to foment unity.
But
we've seen that in the last year. Sorry, Joe.
By the way, I just want to make a quick, so I made a sort of off-the-cuff remark that, you know, we were testing our email system, and Rosemary made made a remark about this. But so then everybody is just writing in and saying it's working. So we've got about 800 emails that just say it's working. So we know that now. So we're cutting out. So that's part of our. We'll have more when we actually we'll actually get real letters in a moment when we get through all the other stuff. Just telling that it's working.
It is, Joe, and I know that our wonderful friends in the newsroom will be getting the stuff in here as it comes.
Yes,
because we don't have all of the letters we should have. Okay,
look at that. See, I told you, Radar O'Reilly.
Right. Panel, unfortunately, negative makes a more powerful impact on voters than positive or policy-based information and ads. Prime example, that is why the news and newspapers have so much bad news and front-page bad news instead of happy-go-lucky stories. Solve that mystery, and then we can go positive in campaigns.
Well, look at Donald Trump came out the other day and gave a healthcare speech.
Yes.
And the media coverage was, wasn't it great that he gave a healthcare speech? But if you look at the substance of it, which they didn't dissect.
It was unbelievable.
It was JAMA.
First thing I will do is to repeal Obamacare.
And what happens then to the 20 million people who now have coverage?
Exactly.
And he says that we're going to let people have insurance across state lines. Okay, well then what happens to people with pre-existing conditions? If you do that, people with pre-existing conditions are going to lose their health insurance. So the coverage was, isn't it great that he talked about health care? But even reading a health care speech, he got it wrong. He clearly didn't understand what he was reading. And he said, he didn't even get the governing right. He said, we're going to call a special session.
Which they don't even have.
That's not the process when, you know, in the...
He's thinking New York State.
He's thinking New York State. He doesn't even understand the process. So there's a case where he gave a speech and they didn't cover the substance of the issues. If they had, then the people at his rallies would have understood that he's proposing something that is not in their best interest.
Peter says, if Trump wins, I believe that at best he will serve one disastrous term, and at worst he will be impeached and or resign due to self-dealing, business scandals, or conflicts of interest with his corrupt children. And that's assuming he doesn't destroy not just our economy, but the entire world. And that's from Peter.
I think Hillary also faces the strong possibility of, if she gets in, of one term. They're already talking about impeachment proceedings. She hasn't even nailed it down. The FBI is not going to stop.
But that speaks to the importance of not only winning the White House for the Democrats, but winning the Senate.
A big right.
I mean, it's so critically important, because if Trump wins, that means that the Republicans retain control of the Senate, and that means the Supreme Court is lost, you know, for a generation.
I think they're just, and I don't think he's even going to appoint Supreme Court people. I think the plan now is to just keep it at 8 and maybe even drop it again.
No, you're wrong.
You have candidates. You have Republican candidates, including the Republican candidate for Senate in North Carolina, saying in advance of being elected that they are not going to do their job. Hand those people a copy of the Constitution.
They have
a constitutional obligation.
But the reason I disagree with Rosemary is if Trump wins and the Senate remains Republican, of course he's going to appoint conservative judges to the Supreme Court.
I just want to say that if you say wrong again into your microphone, I'm going to start shimmying behind mine. Ooh.
Oh boy, you did stab too late last night. Okay, and Dan says, in 2014, I moved to Albany from my home in Denver, Colorado, to daycare my grandson, who is now 26 months old. My son and his wife work. As a regular NPR listener for years, also a political, environmental, and education activist, I was wondering how biased this roundtable is. Normalizing, I listen to Morning Edition at this time. What? I have no idea what that means.
I don't. Normally,
how biased we are. We all support different people. None of us support Trump, and you don't have to guess at our biases. We tell you.
Anthony says, "Are emails considered intellectual property? Please don't laugh. If they are, is the publication of stolen emails WikiLeaks legal?" Paula says, "We
and
listen."
What about the emails that Donald Trump didn't turn over in the litigation? Yeah. So.
Please.
Or Paula, that George Bush also disappeared from
the White House.
We never talk about that either.
Paula, we listen to the panel occasionally, but would so more often if the panel were more balanced. On a rare occasion, you have invited a guest with contrasting points of view. It's much better show. Would you discuss this today? No, but you did. And that's the point. You wrote
I like
it.
That answer.
And we read it. Okay.
I like that answer.
Panel, do you actually believe that anyone has changed their vote in the last 10 days? I challenge you to find one person who has. I cannot think of an election where who you are voting for has been more defined.
I do think
Hillary will pick up some women votes that are undisclosed to keep the peace at home.
I find that interesting. The polls have certainly changed. So that is that people changing votes or a different sample that's being polled? I don't know how that works. I think that you pointed it out the other day. What could Mike Spain did actually that there is nothing you could tell me right now that would change my vote from Hillary Clinton? Is she an alien? She's a non-human. Still think she's better than Trump, and I know that there are Trump people who feel just as strongly the same for their person.
Right.
So we're not going to change, but that part in the middle, people who say, "Oh, I don't like either one. I don't like this race at all," aren't we fighting for them? But first you get them to the polls,
right,
and then what their final decision will be.
And real quick, I just want to say, I mean, just yesterday we had not one but two letters of people who said, "I voted for Hillary Clinton, but knowing what I know now, I wish I could take back my vote." So I do think there is a change. I mean, we heard that.
Yeah,
they said, "Find
too.
Me like one person." Well, we've been hearing from them. I think it's dangerous to think that they're not there are people who have not made up their mind.
And historically, the last 3 or 4 days, 5 days, that's why when I've been on here before, I say, you know, the polls really don't mean that much because they move dramatically often in the last 4 or 5 days. And that's because the people in the middle, which is who decide the elections,
right,
they either decide to vote or not vote. And then they make up their minds.
And it's the middle only in a few states, too, that we're talking about. I think the Comey announcement of Friday was really disastrous for Hillary Clinton. I think a lot of people, Republicans who are saying, "I just can't do Trump," are now reverting to party loyalty, saying, "Well, she's as bad as he is. I'm going to go back to Trump."
You may be right. I would use another word for Comey's announcement, and which is despicable.
Deplorable, yeah.
Well, you could say deplorable. I say despicable. I mean, the idea that he did that.
Icky?
Is just so. Well, icky is almost nice.
Okay.
But okay.
I think the choice. The day before he said it, the day after he said it, is still the same when you think about Donald Trump and his qualifications to be president of the United States.
We have to go to a break. Let's go to one letter here, and then we'll take a break.
Panel, for weeks, every time Sanders is mentioned, Libby or Rosemary get in a shot against him. This only lowers those taking the shot. Sanders isn't running anymore. You don't have to put him down anymore. By the way, I heard one semi-anti-Sanders thing from somebody here. But I have to say, I have not heard that, and I think when you say every time, that doesn't help.
He's right. It's true, and I wrote back to him, and what I said was, my shots are at the supporters of Bernie Sanders who have not, like him, moved on to support Hillary. He's been a mensch, some of his supporters.
He's taking a vitally important role now in bringing these votes home and understanding that we need to win the Senate, that, you know, the Democrats need to win this election. I think he's doing a tremendous job.
Yes. I will admit to the hairball sound whenever we get those letters saying, "Oh, if only Bernie were here, we'd be in better shape."
All right. With that note and that musical note, I think we'll take a break. We'll be right back and continue. Remember the new email address: panel@wamc.org. panel@wamc.org. We'll be right back.
Support comes from Saratoga Bridges, Ballston Spa, New York, a community resource for people with disabilities and their families, supported employment, day services, and more. SaratogaBridges.org. The Honest Weight Food Co-op, 100 Waterville Ave, Albany, New York, specializing in local and organic produce, natural groceries, fine cheeses, locally raised meats, and ready-to-go organic meals. Honestweight.coop. Fort Hill Auto Body, Amherst, Massachusetts, locally owned and operated since 1997, providing auto body repair, detailing, painting, and glass replacement, a proud supporter of public radio. FortHillAutoBody.com. And Apex Solar Power, Queensbury, New York, installing solar-powered systems throughout the Northeast with installs completed in one day. ApexSolarPower.com.
Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Alan Chartok, Rosemary Armeo, and Teresa Bourgeois are the make up the panel this morning. I'm Joe Donahue, and we welcome your letters. They can go to a new web email address. Most of you, I would say about 70% of the email coming in is coming into the right address. Just a reminder that as of the 14th, we won't be taking show emails, meaning panel emails, at the roundtable address. So if you want to be read and you want to be considered on the air, you have to write it to panel. So it's panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. All right, let's move on to some other things and other topics and talk about what is going on. We'll go actually to on the trail that that Hillary Clinton is painting a grim picture of a Trump administration in an appeal to undecided voters. Meanwhile, Donald Trump is spending a lot of time not only going after the media itself, but also talking about Obamacare and making a very big issue, making that a huge issue in his last minute push on these few days.
Well, you know, I think Teresa had it right when she said earlier about the 20 million people who are on Obamacare. Those people are among the most disadvantaged in our society. And the entire thrust, in my opinion, of the Trump campaign and what he has been saying is against, quote, them. Those people who don't have enough. We got a letter the other day that said, I don't care about those people who are getting Obamacare and who are now on the dole. It fits consistently with his message, which is, I have to say racist. Now, I'm very concerned when Obama looks out into that audience yesterday and says, you got to vote. You got to remember that people in Selma, that the people who marched on that bridge in Selma, John Lewis and others had their heads busted as a result of this. And yet we are finding, it's undeniable, that fewer people, African-Americans, are coming out to vote in this election. The Times has documented it. To me, this is one of the great riddles of the American democracy.
Well, I think you're going to have a big, what they call the Souls to the Polls movement on this weekend.
Yes, but compared to the last time, Teresa, it's not right there.
Well, I a couple of things. Yes, but I don't think that they were ever going to, because they were historic opportunity to vote for the first African American.
Yes.
You're not going to reach those levels. Two things are happening. One is Hispanic vote is, there's a tidal wave of registration and voting. So that might balance some of it off. And also, there have been these documented efforts in North Carolina, Florida, Texas, other places that have been blocking people from voting. And that's beginning to get cleared up. They're opening up more voting places. And there is this big push, as there has been in the last few cycles, to on Sunday get people, Saturday and Sunday, get people to go and vote. And so you may see some shift in that. But it is concerning. It is concerning. And I think that's why you hear President Obama and Michelle Obama and others out there talking about it. There's going to be a Jay-Z concert. She's with Pharrell Williams today in North Carolina. I think that, and that's the interesting thing. I mean, you think of the whole range of surrogates that she has. Stevie Wonder is going to do a concert. But I think that there's
going
to be.
We saw JT last night, yesterday with him. That was great.
Yeah. Wasn't that great?
That's that's for us old folks.
Oh, I love JT. I just love JT.
We have a couple more.
Well, we have a lot more, actually.
The new pack.
Our back office has been doing a terrific job here, Joe. Now,
so far,
okay. So Elizabeth says, "Hello, panel."
Hello.
Did anyone hear about the poll of people in Florida who have already voted, which was discussed on Lawrence O'Donnell?
Yeah.
It showed that 28% of the Republican voters had voted for Hillary. Thoughts? Well, we did mention that yesterday.
Yeah, they were exit polls. That makes me nervous. They're notoriously the least reliable of polls.
So then I also heard that that had sort of turned, that in more recent days that it turned. Is that not true? Or
that's not true.
Okay, all right.
I think people, it's just so close. People need to go vote, and they need to vote their pocketbook, vote their vote for democracy.
go ahead.
Okay. Ron said, please do not ignore the black church in Greenville.
Mississippi. That's horrible.
Absolutely.
That was burned last night after Vote Trump was spray painted on the side. Is this a foretaste of Trump followers' actions, especially if Trump loses?
So, I mean, he obviously came out very quickly and
denounced that
as, you know, as of course you would hope
Kellyanne
expect that anyone would do. But I don't know. I mean, we've seen this, I guess, on all sides. But how much should a candidate in a campaign be blamed? And before everyone starts writing me and talks about the racist overtones of the campaign over the last 2 years, I understand that. But I am asking about when you have an act of violence, and a crime of what that ultimately does. And how much? I'm asking the logistic question of how much blame a campaign should take for an incident like
I want to answer that. I think if the
black church in Mississippi, by the way, burned, and on the exterior of the wall after the burning, vote Trump.
Yeah, I want to answer that. I mean, I think you are right that, or the import of your words are correct. But on the other hand, if the thrust of your campaign is basically racist or misogynist,
fomenting violence,
and say beat them up or whatever, then I think you really do have to take some blame for this.
And I think that one of the things I find most disturbing about Donald Trump is that he either doesn't understand or doesn't care about the power of his words, the effect of his words, whether it is fomenting violence at a rally or whether it's the things that he says flippantly about nuclear weapons
or
NATO.
Disabled reporters.
Yeah. Or POWs, that when you are seeking or in a position of leadership, words have power and meaning and can influence people's in ways that you may or may not understand, and you have to, there is a responsibility that comes with that, and he just is not living up to that responsibility. And you hear this from Republican leadership as well. I mean, it's not just Democrats, for all of those who are listening. Republican leadership is saying the same thing.
I do think it's hilarious that it makes news when Paul Ryan actually says the Republican candidate for president's name. I find that amusing. He said it once on the Hugh Hewitt show, and that became like a headline. It was like, that says a lot, doesn't it?
If you step back and think about it, this is absolutely amazing. There is a candidate who's running for president of the United States, and when he goes to these rallies in these states, the candidates in those states do not stand with him.
Mm-hmm.
The leader of the House, the Republican leader of the House, will not say his name nor stand with him.
Yep.
Although McConnell today said, Trump.
Jason, the problem is I think that helps him.
Even Elise Stefanik around here, literally, I watched a news coverage of her running to her car to avoid having to talk about the Republican candidate, her Republican candidate for president. It's just unprecedented.
Stefanik?
Yeah.
It is helpful for a man who's running against the establishment. I think they do him a favor every time they do that with his base.
But
they
what
think
does that
it's
say
great
about his ability to govern? I mean,
no one's thinking about that. They don't. They don't want government.
I mean, he says he's going to repeal Obamacare. He's going to be with a group of people who won't even stand with him. First of all, on the merits, that's not good for working people. That's not good for anyone who has a, his plan is not good for anyone who has a pre-existing condition.
If I said to you, okay, you've had 150 years of the Republic to rule, you know all about governance, you're the freaking expert, what have you done to me? What have you done for me? And so they don't care that he's going to go in and throw a wrench into things or doesn't know how to do anything and just act like a bull in a china shop. That is a strength
well,
for him.
Let's
which
just
is,
say, what
how the, do you fight that?
What have the Democrats done in the last 8 years? The Dow is up how many points? Jobs are up how many?
Doesn't mean anything
poverty's
to me if, I,
down.
If I've lost a job. My daughter just retired.
20 million more people
and,
have health insurance. I mean, he's talked down the economy, but the facts don't bear out the rhetoric.
We have about a minute before we go over to news.
I do want to, Joe, if it's all right, read Jay, who writes to us almost every day, who's on the other side, and who says, oh, I'm so sorry, white working class voters still feel that Hillary cannot be trusted with their concerns.
There you go.
She is perceived as a condescending elitist.
Because for a year, he, in other words, well, for 20 years, they've been litigating against her, and for a year, they've been saying, crooked Hillary, crooked Hillary. But the facts, her whole life has been dedicated to working on issues of working families, and particularly children.
From the Department of Things Are Getting Dirty, from Greg says, I saw a commercial that claimed Zephyr Teachout cheated on her taxes. Does anyone know if this is true or not? No. And people are saying all kinds of wicked things at the very end here.
They can say whatever they want.
One of the
most
important House races in the country.
Yes, it is. Hi, panel. What do you think that that Trump will do to the media, in quotes, if elected? I think that somehow he will shut them down from doing anything to investigate them.
I do, when we come back, we have 10 seconds where we have to go over. I do want to come back and talk about Katie Turr of NBC and about what happened there yesterday.
Verbal violence.
We will take a break. We'll be back and continue with our panel right after this short news break. Good morning. Welcome back to the Roundtable panel. And to our discussion this morning, we have Alan Chartok here, Rosemary Armeo, and Teresa Bourgeois. And we have you as well. We invite you to write to us. And a reminder, we have a new email address for you to write to the panel. It's panel, P-A-N-E-L, panel at WAMC.org. Simple as that. And we'll still take it at Roundtable at WAMC, but only until the 14th. And so we're trying to wean you from that, okay? Just so you know, because then we won't take them anymore. But most of you are being very good this morning. We thank you for that. Yes, very smart. Panel at WAMC.org. I mentioned right before we went to the news break with Ray at the top of the hour that we would talk about Katie Turr. Donald Trump once again singled out NBC journalist Katie Turr by name during a rally on Wednesday, reigniting concerns about reporter safety at Trump rallies. Speaking at a rally in Miami, Trump launched into his oft-repeated line about how the dishonest media never showed the size of his rallies before singling out Turr. There's something happening. They're not reporting it. Katie, you're not reporting it, Katie, Trump said. But there's something happening, Katie. There's something happening, Katie. It was not the first time that Trump had singled out Turr, who has been covering his campaign since last summer. Last December, he called Turr a third-rate journalist during a rally, causing supporters to shout at her and boo during a news conference in July. He told her to be quiet. Following Trump's remarks on Wednesday, other journalists at the rally reported that some Trump supporters were harassing Turr. Now this guy behind me is just endlessly taunting her, Yahoo's Holly Bailey tweeted. Several journalists rallied around her on Twitter, writing supportive tweets with the hashtag I'm with Turr, T-U-R. So, again, when asked about the issue by CNN's Wolf Blitzer on Wednesday evening, Trump campaign manager Kellyanne Conway said the campaign had encouraged their supporters to, quote, be civil, and that Trump had not encouraged supporters to be mean to Katie Turr.
It's not the first female reporter he has gone after. I only hope she has the same financial reward that Megyn Kelly has reaped from an enmity with him. It's extremely dangerous what he is doing. He is turning the media into a target. We're already seeing dropping confidence and respect for the media. It's a dreadful thing that we're going to be facing for the next 4 years, no matter who wins. He's really hurt the press.
If a child had done that at school,
he'd be disciplined.
They'd be disciplined, perhaps sent home. I mean, this is a person running to be president of the United States of America is bullying.
Yep.
Verbal bullying.
it's unconscionable.
And that's, as I said before, that side of the human psyche, the negative side, which he's going for,
yep.
and which is very effective.
Yeah,
very
effective. Cheers for it.
Can you make your point by just going after, like everybody does, just going after the media as opposed to
clearly,
going after a member of the media?
Well, Joe, the answer is you shouldn't, but you do because you find it politically effective. That's the answer. That's why you're doing it. And he knows it, and if he makes it more amorphous or larger group...
Meaning putting a face on it?
Yes. It doesn't work.
He's trying to garner votes by attacking the media.
And everybody else who's in
it. But he's also attacking... A woman.
He's attacked a POW, Senator John McCain. He has attacked a handicapped journalist. He has attacked a Gold Star family. This is not presidential behavior. And that's why Republicans and others have spoken out against it. He thinks it's effective. But for Kellyanne Conway to not own up to it, they have to own up to it.
Teresa, let's face it. We had a letter earlier, which I found very interesting, that said he'll be a one-term president. I consider him to be a despotic man. And therefore, if you go back in history and you see somebody who gets into office and doesn't want to give it up and has, fascistic tendencies, then you really have a very, very, very dangerous situation.
There are a lot of very critical issues in the world right now. The Middle East.
Sure.
Korea, North and South Korea. I mean,
Russia.
Russia.
Forget about anything else.
You look all around the globe. Climate change issues. Those aren't being discussed. They're not being focused on. But this person does not have the capacity to deal with those critical issues. And he is, again, tearing at, I'm being redundant, but he's tearing at the fabric of our country. Is this a way to win an election? And he may, but is it the right way? Is this what we are as Americans? I mean, that's what really people need to vote about.
This is preaching to the choir, Teresa. I could not agree with you more, and it's such an ineffective message because anybody who's thinking the other way will just say the Obama was also not able to deal with any of these issues, and the country is worse off for it. Let's try something completely different. And there's not a good answer to that.
President Obama brought our troops home.
He didn't. We're still as immersed in Afghanistan and Iraq as we were. Not a good argument,
There are far fewer boots. It's the facts. There are far fewer boots on the ground. It's still a lingering problem, but there are far fewer boots on the ground.
And there's still bombs going off in the middle of Paris. People do not feel safer than they did when Obama started. Syria's still a mess. It's still leaking migrants and refugees all over the world. The people who are arguing against what has happened have a point, and we have to start addressing it, and we're not.
I do want to just two things. One is that we've been told by our engineering team that we're on low power. So a lot of people are writing in and saying that that our signal strength is weak. We know we're working on it, and so there are folks on the tower, and we don't want to zap them. So we have cut the power down, and we are fixing a problem, and we will take care of it. So thank you for your notes of concern, and we are on it, and we will. We'll let you know you'll know when we're back up and running. Now, we do have a bunch of letters. Even with that, even on low power, people are still hearing us and writing at panel@wamc.org. And Alan's got a whole stack.
Yes, I do. And let me add to that, if you're in the Berkshires or other places, you could try it on 105.1.
Listen online.
And you can go online. You can do it all. Yeah.
1400 in Albany.
1400 in Albany on
right.
the AM side.
Yes.
Okay. And Julie says, Donald Trump is a bully. He started this persona as a young man to fend off attention that he cannot read. He may have dyslexia. And if that is the actual issue, okay. But do we really want a bully who cannot read as our president? Elio says, what happened to unbiased journalism? I miss hearing both sides of the story presented without opinions. I find myself searching WikiLeaks, guerrilla journalist, hackers, NPR, and BBC for truth. We can blame establishment media like CNN, Fox for the loss of true journalism.
Oh, man. Yeah, well, you've been listening all morning to me rag on Teresa, who is actually expressing my very thoughts. There's a great effort here to look for and to express the other side. You hear that in WAMC all the time. And CNN, I'm not watching them anymore because Corey Lewandowski being there. You get way more than just one side on that horrible station.
You do. Amanda says, with Trump facing two different legal proceedings in the next 2 months, why is nobody, Clinton included, not responding to his claims that she should be jailed for bringing up his preponderance of legal problems? Good morning, panel. From what I've heard and read, there are very few, quote, undecided voters. As discussed by you and others, this election may hinge on how many voters actually go to the polls. I'm very concerned about voter suppression efforts in minority communities, especially the battleground states. Lou.
If you have friends in Florida, North Carolina, friends or family, Michigan, New Hampshire, call them. Encourage them to vote.
I wish that helped.
It does. It makes
my,
a difference.
My sister is not going to have a Thanksgiving dinner at her house if Trump wins because she's going to blame her in-laws for it.
Panel, why isn't the mass media talking about Trump's coziness to mobsters for the first 40 years, mentioned in several books about Trump and the Daily Cause and National Mags? Isn't this a bombshell? And that's Frank without a K.
Or what's in his taxes and who he owes money to. I mean, I've been saying it for months. That's so deeply troubling.
Once again, I'm so frustrated. These have been covered. The problem is that his relationship with the mobsters is indirect and so casual as to be not sensational when it's written out.
But
it's been totally covered. And his taxes too, Teresa.
They've been covered but not uncovered. Right? I mean, we don't know.
Well, how are you going to uncover it?
We don't know who he owes money to. We do know that all of the WikiLeaks, all of the Russian leaks have been about Mrs. Clinton.
Okay,
and not
we can't
Trump.
Control the hackers. And I, for one, I hate what he's doing by not releasing his taxes, but I'm not going to sit here and advocate, yeah, we should expose tax records or medical records. No, we should not.
Oh, goodness, no. No, you should never do
He's
that.
He's exploiting the privacy rights that we give to all citizens. I don't want to take away the privacy rights.
Matthew says, Alan is right to worry. I know numerous Republicans who were going to write in, now plan to vote for Trump because he is now looking plausible. Samantha says...
Ask Bill Weld about that.
Yeah. Samantha says...
Well, he took that back, but...
What'd you say?
Bill Weld last night sent out an email saying that he was...
took it back?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
He said
he was basically defending Hillary, right?
Yes. And he wrote an email to supporters and said, my supporters with Gary Johnson and yours should be too.
Well, I suppose he says that. Samantha, I wonder if it just doesn't have something to do with voters who became adults under an Obama presidency. They're just spoiled by how great and likable he is. And if they don't have a long-ranging exposure to other politicians to realize that often we don't particularly like a candidate, but we vote for them anyway because we look at the policies. I can just see how unlikely the unlikability of the candidates just takes away from all the enthusiasm. And Robert says, with regard to appointees to the Supreme Court, why is there no enforcement mechanism to bring a rogue Congress into compliance with the Constitution?
There is. It's called voting. And if you elect a Democratic Senate...
It's very rogue.
this crazy thing that. Called voting. And if you elect a Democratic Senate, you will get a Supreme Court.
John says, I'm with Alan. As a gay man, I am also very, very scared. Trump and Pence winning would be a threat to the continued freedom, if not very existence, of every LGBT person in America. We did that already. And I think Joseph.
Was that good for?
I think we're good to
go. All right. That's good because I want to get to a couple of other things before we leave. And that is one of the other things I do want to talk about, of course, is the. Two back-to-back issues. One, gun control. There's an article in the Washington Post this morning about how gun control advocates are hoping to finally win on Tuesday. And basically, voters in Maine and Nevada are poised to approve background checks for almost all private sales and transfer of guns. The ballot initiatives seek to close a loophole in federal law that exempts private sales, such as those online or at gun shows, from comprehensive checks in California and Washington State, which have already closed the loophole. Voters are being asked to take gun control a step further. Washington will vote on whether to allow family members to seek a temporary order barring a person from having a gun if the person is determined to pose a risk to themselves or others. In California, residents will be asked whether they want to ban the sale of high-capacity magazines and require background checks for ammunition purchases. So the point of this article being that gun control advocates are looking to win these fights on Tuesday on the backs, especially in many of the states that I mentioned, I guess probably California being the outlier, on the backs of Donald Trump.
Well, better we should have this than nothing. On the other hand, we all know that every time you take a look at weapons that are seized in New York City after a crime, that inevitably they come from other states. So you can do all you want to have tough gun control laws. But until we get this into a national perspective, there will be a lot of holes. Am I espousing that when people have a chance to vote for this stuff that they don't? No, indeed. I think it's great, but I do think we really have to remember this is a national problem.
I think the advocates have been taking a different approach in the last year or so, and I think Michael Bloomberg's funded efforts have a lot to do with this, but they've decided that they can't take a national approach. They're going to start with a state-by-state and local approach. NPR did a fantastic piece on this the other day, and they were talking with the families in Washington State about there's some minor, well, very significant changes. If, for instance, you have a family member who has mental health issues, can you get a block on that person from purchasing weapons? Those kinds of things that get put into the bucket of, you know, sensible restrictions. And I think that this approach apparently may be working to get some, you know, shift in this, some minor. I mean, but I started working on gun control issues back in the early 80s when I worked for the House Judiciary Committee. We had the first hearing talking, well, again, with now Senator Schumer and others. And it's a long, slow process. And it's not an effort to take away people's rights, you know, Second Amendment rights, but these are some basic fundamental protections to keep people safe, and I hope it works.
Are you optimistic?
I'm optimistic that there will be small changes around the country and that that's an important first step.
We have about 3 minutes, and we'll do a last dash of the letters here before we adjourn for this morning's panel.
My wonderful and intelligent mother told me as a freshman in college that I couldn't come home for Thanksgiving if I didn't get an absentee ballot. Obviously, I don't want to spend Thanksgiving in the dorms. She did the same thing with my sister. I voted in every election since then. That's from Keith.
I love
your
that.
Mom.
Yeah.
Yay, mom.
That's
good job, mom. Yeah.
Good stuff.
Fear not. Hillary has got this. You say everyone must vote. But do be careful what you ask for, because the disenchanted millennials might just choose a third-party candidate.
Hey, well, but voting is voting.
Just vote. I really... Yep.
Janice says, I find it to be true that the Congress is the problem in this country and has caused the anger out there, and the anger is placed on Obama and the Dems. They've obstructed everything and could have benefited the middle and lower classes. LBJ was the last Democratic candidate to receive a majority of white vote. The key to an HRC victory is the minority vote.
You know, the writer on the asking about the Congress, the House, and Senate, I mean, that's very, very interesting. They have to decide when they run for office, do they want to govern or do they want to litigate? You know, if you want to govern, run for public office. If you want to litigate, get a different job. Mm-hmm. But this notion that there, I know it's a complex issue, but we need to, Newt Gingrich planted the seeds for this. Mm. We have had a very long time when people say, you know, that they're They're not going to compromise. But if you're a legislator, you need to compromise.
I was just struck by that letter of the listener who wrote that, you know, be careful of what you wish for and who people will vote for. And
people,
I mean, people, that's what democracy is.
Exactly.
I mean, you have to vote. You have to go out. And I don't mean to pick on the letter writer. And I'm just a little more emotional than I normally am because the Cubs won the World Series. But but it does seem that that's the whole, I mean, that's the whole point of what we're doing. No matter who you're going to vote for or what you're going to vote for, up ballot, down ballot, wherever you're going to vote, just go out and vote.
But Joe, I also think the assumption in the letter is wrong, that if millennials come out, they're all going to vote for third party candidates.
No.
They are not all going to vote for third party candidates.
No, they're not.
ABC had a show this morning with a big panel of a focus group of millennials, and it actually got pretty heated.
Yeah.
And they were divided, probably on purpose, between among Clinton, Trump, and third-party candidate voters.
Mm.
It's all over. Millennials are just like any other generation. They're not a unified bloc.
All I know is that in the great polling that has been done, that, you know, the Johnson and Weld are doing fairly respectably. Jill Stein...
They are.
Well, they are. They are
enough to make a difference.
I mean,
5% is what
4 or 5%.
Yeah,
and if you look at it,
that's quite respectable to me. Jill Stein is somewhere around 1%. Now that's interesting because you would think a lot of the millennial voters who were polled would say Stein.
Mm-hmm. But if you're in North Carolina,
yes,
which is why I think it's great that Bernie Sanders is going there today.
Mm-hmm.
If you're in North Carolina and they pull 5%. You know, it's just,
that could make a
that
big
could,
difference.
That could make a difference in the election. That absolutely.
What are they
make a
polling
difference
in North Carolina?
I can't tell you because I have to go. We have to go.
Oh no!
What?
We have
Can
to
we
go.
Sing, go.
I thought
go,
it was staying for the day.
All right.
Go, go.
Well, thank you all very much, and thanks to everybody. Panel at WAMC.org. We'll be back tomorrow with another edition, and we'll continue with the roundtable after this short break.